Dave Pezzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Pezzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Pezzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Pezzo.
Good morning. Jennifer Stone and Tom Brown here, not Dave Pezzo. We're filling in for him this morning. It's been not so long this time since we were here last.
Yeah, just a couple months.
Yep. So we like to fill in for him when we can. So we are certified financial planners with Pezzo Financial. I have a little over 20 years experience, and Tom is moving on to a little over
11.
11, yep. So we would love calls today talking about anything financial, but what we wanted to start off with this morning is doing a little year-end tax planning. There's some things that we want to get taken care of before year-end that you can only do in the calendar year you're in for tax planning. One thing about having Tom in our office, which is a great benefit, is he does do taxes, so he knows a lot about what's coming up and what we should start planning for.
Yeah, the couple things to be preparing for anyway is obviously get your stuff in place, get your records ready, and if you're making charitable donations, make sure you're getting those done before the end of the year. Another thing is on the college, for the college planning, that the anything in the 520 Idaho 529 has to be done by the end of the end of the year, the fiscal year. I mean, not fiscal year, but calendar year. You know, a lot of like IRAs, Roth IRAs, you can actually not make a contribution until April 15th for this year, but the 529 has to be done in the calendar year.
And I did forget to give the phone number, so if you have questions on this or anything else, please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or you can email us. I'm actually going to give you my email because it's right here and easy for me to access. It's jstone@pezzofinancial.net. Are there other things that we should look for? I know that we talk about selling for losses or making sure that you look at what your gains might be for the year and see if there's anything you can do to help with that.
Right. So either with your financial advisor or yourself, take a look. And if you have one that has a significant loss, then it can really help you offset, especially if you have some other capital gains. It's a good way of managing those losses and being able to get some money out of it, even if you've picked an investment that didn't work out.
So can you write off the entire loss, or can you only do a portion?
Just up to $3,000 per year. So if you have a significant loss, then that loss will carry over to the next year and offset any capital gains in the future.
Okay. So that's what you can offset as well, correct?
Right, right. So if you have like a capital gain of $8,000 on one position and you've got a loss of $5,000, then you have a net loss of just $3,000. So.
Good, good. So those are things you have to get taken care of before year end. It looks like we already have a call this morning. I think that's awesome.
Wow.
I know. We're going to have to tell Dave for sure on this.
Yes.
One. Good morning, Jim.
Hello, Jennifer and Tom. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice to hear you live. I guess you're live, not a recording.
Yep, we're live.
Hey, Tom, I got a question for you.
Okay.
I've recently, and this has to do with taxes, invested in a limited partnership, energy transfer equity, and I just wondered what the ramifications are. I think there are additional forms or something you have to do with the limited partnership.
Right. So from a limited partnership, typically they will be taxed as a partnership. Therefore, you're going to get a K-1 statement, which is just a tax form that you'll get sometime next year. Sometimes they're very late, and so you have to pay attention to that because limited partnerships, they have to wrap up all their accounting for the plan and file all their taxes before they issue the K-1, and sometimes those K-1 statements can even come out after April 15th. So they will give you some information. They'll send you out a letter, probably a couple letters telling you, you know, when you should be able to expect it. And then if they are going to be late, then they should send you an estimate so you can at least file an extension and let them with an estimate of how much it's going to be. But, yeah, you're right. It is a little bit different. It isn't a 1099 that you usually get from a regular investment.
See, that's what I heard. My brother, you know, was doing taxes for somebody that had that. And, for instance, he said that, that you know, these days a lot of people, and maybe partnerships, whatever, want to delay paying their taxes. So they'll get an extension, you know, for the partnership. Well, if they do that, then that means I've got to get an extension and all that. And, you know, I don't like that idea at all. So I was thinking about, you know, selling this stuff, but I guess it's too late for this year, right?
Well, you could. It depends upon, you know, I'm not familiar with this one, but I wouldn't sell it just because of when the tax form comes out. Whether you have to file an extension or not doesn't make it a bad investment or, you know, something shady. It just means that it takes them a while. And I know it's frustrating. I have a lot of clients that, you know, are always having to file extensions because of this. And it is frustrating because they like to have it all, their taxes all prepared and be done early. And it does cause you to wait. But I wouldn't make it, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad investment or something you'd sell it because of that.
Well, the thing is, I mean, you know, there's not that much, and it sure as hell is not that good of an investment. You know, when I bought it, if I'd have known it was not a corporation and a limited partnership, I wouldn't have bought it to begin with. So,
right, but you're correct, Jim. It is too late for this year because you've held it most of the year, so you're going to get the K-1 this year.
Yeah, you're still going to get it no matter what. That's true.
Right now, it's short-term anyway. But maybe I'll just bite the bullet this year. And I don't know, whatever. I don't know. Like I say, I'm one that, you know, I want to get, as soon as I get that stuff, get it out of the way. Filing extensions and worrying about taxes is not in my game plan, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So. We know people that feel that way, too, so that there's they're definitely get rid of it for those reasons.
Yep.
Well, anyway, I can't think of anything else, but anyway, I hope you have a great show and a lot of people call in.
We do, too. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Another thing to talk about, too, though, are mutual fund distributions.
Yeah.
And how they're handled towards the end of the year. They do, a lot of funds put out the estimates of what they think they're going to be paying towards the end of the year. How do people prepare for that?
Yeah, so it's really, you have to be really cautious because that could be, especially if you're investing in something that's a pretty significant amount of money, you could end up with quite a tax situation because of a big distribution from a fund. So before you buy anything, be very cautious and do what you can to find out if they're going to, if they've already announced that they're going, what their estimates are, and make sure that you're understanding how it works, because we've seen people that have a loss in investment has gone down, but they paid significant taxes because of a capital gain at the end of the year. So those things are always when you're buying mutual funds, especially at the end of the year, you need to be cognizant of when those capital gains are getting paid out.
Right, because what can happen in non-IRA accounts is a big deal. That's where the tax hit will happen. And what if you buy it prior to a distribution, you're responsible for paying tax on that, even if you've only held it for a couple days.
Yeah, versus you're exactly the same as if you've held it for a couple years or so forth or a couple days. You're going to get the same capital gain distribution, and that's one of the things that hurt, you know, that people talk about mutual funds that they don't like is because of the capital gain distributions and getting stuck with the tax bill.
Right. One good thing is, like Tom mentioned earlier, you can fund Roth IRAs up until April 15th of the year after for the prior year. So that gives you some flexibility on that if you're wondering if you're going to be able to qualify because of income or other situations that may come into play. So that gives you some flexibility, but there are things that do need to be done before year end.
Yep. Especially, and also another thing is if you're going to be making estimated tax payments and it does work out, you need to be very cautious of this. You can make an estimated tax payment for your state income taxes, and if it works out, then you can deduct those on your federal tax for this next year. But you know, if you had some significant income this year and you want to do that, you always have to be wary of doing that too because of alternative minimum tax. It's a qualifying event.
Okay, very good. What we're going to talk about, last time we were here, we were talking about ages and saving and what mistakes and what positive things can happen as you work through your lives. We were talking about a couple of families that were from 25 years old and just starting out in their investing life. What we're going to do when we come back from the first break is actually get into this a little bit deeper on where they are 10 years later and what some of the decisions they've made, where that's put them. The reason we like to talk about this, it's not as much about the numbers and picking investments and the best choices on funds or anything like that. It's just not as important as getting your finances right. We've found through all of our experience in meeting with multiple hundreds and hundreds of people, sometimes more, that they don't get money right. It's a big deal in all aspects of their life. So we're going to take a break now. When we come back, we're going to go into a little more of our two families, the spenders and the savers. And we would really like your phone calls, or feel free to send us an email, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Or my email is jstone@petsofinancial.net.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. On Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are filling in this morning for Dave Petso. Please call us if you'd like to talk about anything at 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or an email, jstone@petsofinancial.net. Last time we were here, we were, like we said, talking about the two families, both very much hypothetical. They're not real families, but and we've kind of taken with the spenders and really beat them up with a lot of what we hear. But the thing is, most of these things, if not, I guess all of them, have been conversations we've had with people and situations that we've tried to help people to work through. So what we're going to do is go back and just kind of recover what the 25-year-old spenders were doing, and then we'll go into the savers. The spenders are more fun to talk about just because you can beat them up a little bit more. But
a lot more drama.
A lot more drama in that family. The thing that we noticed this time is we'll just kind of go back through and say most of the time when people come to meet with us when they're young, we try to go in and break apart what they have and what we can do to set goals and objectives on retirement. But then it's kind of up to them to do the plan. We can only give them some guidance of what we think they need to do, but we are not there every day living their lives for them. So we try to periodically call, check in, have updates, and just see where they're going. So over the last 10 years with the spenders, we've been doing that. We've been checking in with them periodically just to see how they are. Most of the time we get the comment of, oh, we're doing just fine. We're not ready to get back together again. But they really need to going through this time of their lives. We're going to take a call real quick, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about this. Lee?
Hey, yes, good morning, Jennifer and Tom. How are you folks this morning?
We are great. How are you?
Fine. I have a question concerning my profit so far and the investment portfolio I had.
Okay.
I got my third quarter statement, and I looked at it, and so far this year, I've earned about 1 to 2% return. And I'm thinking, you know, the stock market and the investments as a whole are doing pretty good this year, I think. And I'm looking at mine and scratching my head. I'm thinking that's only doing 1 to 2%. I'm a little bit concerned that it should be doing more than that. And the money that I have invested is roughly 50 grand. And, it's a national firm that I have invested in. So what is your thoughts on, shouldn't it be doing a little better than 1 to 2% after 9 months? What is your thought?
It's very hard to say unless we know what you're invested in.
I understand.
Some investments have done better. Some have actually done worse than that this year. So when that's a hard thing. Plus, we need to know what it's being saved for, because if this is money you're going to need in a short period of time or even a middle period of time, that's not a horrible return. It just depends on what it is and what you're using it for.
Well, it's just money that I don't need, and I'm just investing it just to see if I can get it to grow a little bit. It's not money that I have to have. It's just excess that I've invested and hoping I can get a decent return. But I'm just thinking that 1 to 2% is not very much, and maybe I need to massage that a little bit and see if we can switch some things around to get a better return before the end of the year.
Lee, is it mostly in mutual funds?
Yes.
Okay. And when you're looking at the statement, because I had this question a couple weeks ago, a client had, when you're looking at the how are you determining the 1 to 2%? Are you looking at just the statement values?
Yes.
Okay. Because I know that we had a client that was looking off to the right and looking at all the they said what the dividend yields were for each one of the holdings, and it said, you know, 1% or 2% or whatever, and they thought that that was the return on that fund, and it was really just saying what that fund paid out as dividends. So it looks like you're looking at the right information.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Tom.
Oh, I just want to know, how long have you had this investment? Is it something new?
No, I've had it for 3 years, and the way I determined that it's 1% to 2%, I took my total that I had invested at the beginning of this year, January the 1st, through September, the end of last month.
Right.
And there's an amount of money that I earned there, and I divided that to get a percentage.
Right.
And it came out between 1% and 2%.
Okay.
That's how I determined that.
Okay. And are you doing these investments yourself?
No, sir. I have a firm that is doing them for me.
Okay. Have you talked to them lately about why that would be?
I have scheduled another appointment with them for probably the first or second month of November to look at this and see if we need to move around and swap and et cetera.
Okay.
But they're telling me that we're on track to make between 5% and 6% per year, and I'm comfortable with that. But if that's the case, then they better hurry up, because from 1% to 2% is quite a far stretch.
Yeah,
between 5% and 6%.
Yeah, you got to be careful on that, too, though, because it's not a guaranteed return. The types of investments that have that 5% to 6%, it won't be every year. Again, we don't. It's a little difficult to give too much advice on that piece of it, but and also be careful not to get caught up in, I should be doing more and chasing investments that have done better. It needs to really be based on, if this is your plan, these are the investments that they think are best for you. We all get caught up in the whole, oh, I'm missing out, or I want to make more. But just make sure that you're not jumping into something and chasing a return, okay?
Right. And another thing to be cautious is looking at the S&P 500 or the Dow or something and trying to gauge your investments compared to those, because most likely, in I would say for a lot of clients, they come into these investments and they you'll say something like, well, I'm conservative, I want to be conservative, right? When that happens, then the investment advisor or whoever is going to follow those instructions and be conservative. So you kind of get in a thing where we want to be conservative, and then we have an up in the market. Then you want to, well, now I want better returns, and it's kind of having your cake and eating it too. So it all depends on where you're at, and it could be that you need to, could be some changes that need to be made. It could be, Like I said, it's probably best if you just sit down with them, understand why the investments are doing what they're doing, and know a little bit more about them, and then you'll understand why they are or not performing the way you'd hoped.
Yeah. And, the market, it's been an interesting thing. There's certain sectors that do well, but then on a diversified portfolio, a lot of times they're not doing as well, just because the individual pieces, like the S&P that they quote very often, had a good couple of years, and people think, why am I not doing as well as the S&P? Well, a lot of times it's because you are more diversified, and if you have any bonds in there at all, there's some things that will drag the return of a portfolio, but from a diversification perspective, a lot of advisors feel you have to have everything, and sometimes it just kind of pulls on the return a bit.
Well, I will take both of your advice and just to sit down and talk with him and see what we need to do. But, Tom, you hit on something that I did earlier. I was comparing my return with the stock market, and I learned that that's not a fair comparison. So I got to readjust. But I will sit down with him as you folks are instructing me and see what we can do.
Okay.
Sounds good. Thanks, Lee.
Thank you so much for your time, folks.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to dive into the spenders. Please give us a call at 580-5436-580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Again, please give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. When we left, we were talking a little bit about the spenders and trying to figure out how to get them set on their financial plan. It had been about 10 years since we had sat down, and I know that sounds like a long time, but we'd been talking with them little bits and pieces here or there, and they finally decided it was time to come back in and get serious. Main reason was she feels that they're not making progress, and he feels a little bit tied in, like he doesn't get to have any fun. So,
still hasn't really grown up yet. He still wants to do what he wants to do and kind of stick his head in the sand about where they are financially.
So we sat down and we went through their finances again. When they came in the last time, they had a little over $150,000 in student loan debts. And over the 10-year time, even though they'd been paying on it every month, they'd only maybe knocked it down about $25,000.
And they paid over $75,000 in interest during that time.
Yeah, and that's because the interest rate was, I mean, not extremely high, but at 6%, it really, it does add up, and you don't make a lot of progress.
Yeah, when we were preparing for this, that was, even though I do this type of stuff all the time, that's always kind of eye-opening to me, is that when we're getting started on anything like that and paying down stuff, that you just don't, that's why banks can do pretty well on these loans and so forth, is because look at all the interest they're making at the beginning of the loan and so forth. So it is interesting to see just how little progress you make then. And it also shows why people get so frustrated with the whole process, because they just don't see a lot of progress at the beginning.
Yeah, it is discouraging. I mean, if you think you've paid all that money on a student loan, you barely knocked it down at all. Why would you continue?
Right.
Why do you feel any progress even a little bit? And that's why there's a lot to be said on student loans and how high they get,
right,
and choosing where you want to go to school.
And how hard they are to pay off, because it just becomes a thing where they're so large, it's almost inconceivable that you're going to get them paid off within a short period of time.
That goes back to the discussion we had, a few months ago, that we talked about choosing where to go to school and how important it is to get higher education. First, we want to very much say that, but making choices maybe to find ways to do it a little less cost.
Right, right. Stay away from the student loans as much as possible is a great policy, and I'm right in the middle of that. You're right in the middle of that. And the amount of scholarships and so forth, if you can just get everybody pointing in the right direction and getting those things filled out, is a huge thing to do.
Yeah, it really is. And take advantage of the programs that are offered through a lot of the high schools now. I can't give you a ton of details, but there are a lot of programs out there that allow kids to get a lot of their education, or at least the first year core classes, taken care of while still in high school.
Right.
Much, much less costly.
Yeah. I only wish I would have been around going to high school now, with all the opportunities that they had then, when way back in the Stone Age when I went to high school.
Yeah, me too. So that was another thing that the spenders are coming in to talk about. They're not making much progress on their student loan debt, and they now have a 10-year-old child, and they're wanting to start saving for the 10. Actually, they have three kids at this point, a 10, 8, and a very young 2-year-old, and they're trying to figure out ways to save for their education so that they don't end up with student loans. That's her priority.
And on his side, he still is kind of living on the thing of that they have to live too. They need to be, doing things now, and it still, for him, I think this, a lot of parents that had, or kids that had parents that grew up with student loans and so forth, it just becomes, that's the way it works. So he's kind of, it's Steve and Sally Spender. Steve Spender just thinks that, hey, this is the way we did it. This is the way it goes. And so to save up for college isn't a high priority for him.
Right. They feel like we need to live for today, have more fun today, and my parents didn't help us, so why should we help our kids, is kind of his attitude.
Right, right.
And the thing that we're noticing as we're starting to work down the finances here with the couple of Steve and Sally is that there was tension between them that wasn't there the last time they came in. She's feeling very frustrated that she can't get through to him on what she feels is a priority, and he's feeling the pressure of, well, it'd be easy to solve this if she would just work more.
Right. Yep, he wants her to work more, and she wants to stay home with the kids, which is I have that happen all the time. Once the kids, even when they weren't planning on it, once the kids are born, it's the mother always gets the pull of wanting to stay home.
Right, and his feeling is, well, you know what, your parents are here. The kids can be with their grandparents. That's just as good. And she's starting to feel the whole pull of, well, we're taking advantage of my parents, but we can't afford daycare.
Right, and grandparents are always there and nice to have them in the background to be a backup. but, you know, they're retiring or retired now, and that wasn't their plan, possibly to be a daycare provider 5 days a week.
Right. One positive thing that the Spenders have going for them is his salary went up. So he's actually making a bit more money than he was 10 years ago, which he should be as an engineer. But she stopped working full time, so their income is about the same.
Yep.
But they have a lot more expenses than they had, because we all know that kids, even if they're not in daycare, are a lot more expensive. With three kids and trying to clothe them, feed them, and everything that comes along with it, their budget is not doing well.
No, they're just barely breaking even, which lends itself to they're not saving enough for retirement. They're not saving enough for emergencies. They're just covering the bases and keeping everything current, which lends itself also to that, you know, when things happen, then if you're, and this has happened to them, which if something out of the blue happens that just doesn't fit in their month-to-month budget, then they use credit cards.
Right. And the thing with this as well, is they left 10 years ago, and we had them on a game plan to go to Dave Ramsey to get on Financial Peace to figure out how to budget, because it is hard for people sometimes to sit down and find the time to do it. The hard thing with that was they actually made it to a class or two, and then it was too much of a commitment because they had to go every week or right, how often
for
it
9 weeks.
Yep.
Right.
And they did take one bit of advice out of it, which it's unfortunate that when you go to those classes, you hear what you want to hear. So they knew they had to have $1,000 in an emergency fund. So they did that and they stopped.
Yep. They didn't realize that they didn't listen that the rest of that was that eventually you need to build that up to 3 to 6 months. And so they thought, well, we got $1,000 in the bank. We're now smart, and I'm doing, and this is the big deal that I hear quite a bit from people when I ask them how much they're putting in the 401ks. They'll say, well, I'm maxing it out. And then you find out, well, if you max it out, you could put $18,000 a year into it if you're under 50. But a lot of people hear, well, you just get up to the match, which the match of your company is, in this case, they match up to 2% where he works. So they put in 2%, they get 2%. They think that that's as much as they need to put in. They're maxing it out, which that has nothing to do. You know, the 2% is just gravy that the company offers you. It's a fringe benefit. It isn't something that you should make a rule of thumb that that's all you should ever put into your 401k.
Right. You really should be building. And if we just put in right from the bat, when you get your first 401k, 10%, just to start there, it's amazing the compounding effect, which we'll show you a little bit later on the savers here. But the Spenders just can't quite ever get ahead.
Right. Because, for instance, Steve has been putting 2% with the match into his 401k for 10 years, and he has $18,000 in his 401k. And one of the things he's struggling with is that he's hearing from other people at work and so forth, and they have a lot more in there that saved up, and he's frustrated because he isn't growing enough.
Right, but he's not looking at the point of being that he's not adding to it. They're right. Adding more into it, and people also get that confused and say, well, my account's growing like crazy. What, they're not taking into effect the contributions? He's kind of on the reverse side where he's not adding to it at all, and he said nothing's happening.
Right, right. It just isn't growing very much. I just don't even see the reason of doing it other than what I've been told is the 2% my buddy told me I needed to do. So
right. And don't take advice from buddies. We found that out right. A long time ago. Buddies don't know as much as you think they do. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go into their budget a little bit more. Again, please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Or if you'd like to shoot an email, we'd be happy to answer emails as well, jstone@petzofinancial.net. When we left, we were talking again about our clients, the Spenders. They had just come in for a follow-up meeting after a formal follow-up meeting to try to get them back on task after the last one about 10 years ago. They hadn't really followed much of the advice up to this point. They did get about $1,000 in savings, but they had really continued to overspend. Her main objective is more time with the kids. His is basically more fun. So we're trying to figure out how to get this balanced. And the interesting thing about financial planning is we actually wear a lot of hats. They come to us for a lot of questions. But one of them that really surprises people is we really sometimes become marriage counselors. We're not giving them advice per se on a lot of the intimate sides of marriage, but we are talking a lot about money, which always leads into, you know, positive and negatives with every marriage.
Right. You know, one of the leading causes of divorce is money problems. And so anything you can do to make your finances better makes everything better. And I think when there are issues, and if you have money issues, it just makes everything a little bit harder and harder to deal with, because those things just add to the pressure.
Yeah, and there's a lot of pressure with life. We all know that. But the one thing that we can do is control what we can control. And spending is one of the things that you can control.
For instance, they have a car loan, one car loan. And one thing about when you have car loans is that by the time you get a car loan paid off, then it seems like you're ready for a new car. And you can just kind of get that mode that's just the way life is. You just always kind of going from one car loan to the next until you're dead. And, you know, that's unfortunate, because the amount of interest that we pay out on car loans on a depreciating asset like a car is just extreme, and being able to back that off to buy cars reasonably instead of buying the most you can. Say, you know, the old age-old thing of the car salesman goes, what kind of payment are you looking for? You know, maybe we should just look at what kind of payment should we not have at all.
Right. One thing we could say about the spenders, because we are trying to point out some positives that they made, they actually did pay off one of their cars, and it's his car, and he's been driving it now for a while. But his feeling is it's getting old, he's worried that it's going to break down, and he wants to get a new car, but he doesn't want to get a loan. He actually wants to lease it, because, again, one of his buddies told him that doesn't go towards your debt, because it's just a lease.
Yeah, and if you look in those lease arrangements and so forth, they really, really do not pay off. They're not financially a good thing. They can be, you know, if someone is a salesman or something, they're going to be needing a new car. There is possibly a good reason for that, but rarely do you find that they really pencil out. A car lease does not really pencil out very well financially for a personal situation.
And, of course, she has a new car because she has three kids that she has to haul around. So the payment, again, it's a more expensive car now. So on car debt, they're about where they were 10 years ago, but just on one vehicle, and one is paid off. But they've made absolutely no progress on their credit cards.
Right. In fact, their credit card debt has gone from $30,000 to $45,000,
which is
a big deal. And, you know, when someone comes in and they're laid out their finances and so forth, you look at that. When you see credit card debt, it's just like a doctor looking at someone's chart, and they're going, oh, there's an issue here. It could lead to something a little bit more of a problem. Credit card debt is exactly the same thing. Whenever you see credit card debt, you think there is some overspending going on, which leads you to think that there's a problem with discipline.
Right. And when you say you can live on what you make, and we hear that a lot, that they're taking into account the credit card payment, you're not living on what you're making if your credit card balances go up. I know that sounds very basic, but we hear tons of people tell us all the time, no, I do fine. We do great. We live paycheck to paycheck sometimes, but we're doing great. We're making our payments and everything's fine. Making your payments is not really getting by, though.
Right, and not getting ahead, for sure.
Right, right. So when we sat down with again, we're with the spenders here, and they're really trying to figure out now what to do. He really wants to find an easy solution, and that once you get this far down, it's not easy. And plus, if it is easy, because sometimes you'll inherit money and you actually pay off a good deal of debt, what we've seen happen in those situations is they actually, then just recharge them up almost immediately.
Yeah, it's kind of like giving an alcoholic a drink. You know, if a credit card is a terrible habit that we get into, that we fall into that thing, just when there's some stress in the finances and so forth, the credit card just can be used to alleviate that situation. It's so easy to use. And that is the crux of it, is that we might acknowledge that credit cards are not what we want to be. We know that it isn't what we should be doing. But if times get tough, we'll go back to what we've done before. Our habits our old habits are good or bad will kick in, and we'll just go, we'll just use a credit card this one more time, but this time we'll pay it off right away. We'll talk ourselves right back into it, and that's where when you make a decision that you're going to do something about your finances, it has to be just like I said, just like quitting drinking, just like anything else. You have to say, today's the day that we're not going to live this way anymore, and we're going to live differently.
Kind of like going on a diet, right? Today's the day we're going to change our eating habits. It's hard. It's never easy to make a big shift in the way you live, but it's super important to get these things correct to make your life a little more peaceful.
Yep.
So, again, we're still beating up the spenders. Sat down and we said, okay, let's reset goals. We asked Sally, what are your goals? Her main goals were education for her kids, having more time with them, and she did want to travel. She wants to make memories. Her husband, on the other hand.
Yeah, he still wants to buy a cabin. And I understand that. I live in a household. We'd love to buy a cabin. But we've acknowledged that we don't have enough money. But Steve Spender still has that in the back of his mind, that he wants to buy a cabin. He still wants to retire at 50. He's 35 now. It's a lot closer than he used to be, but wants to retire at 50. Doesn't really know what he's going to do when he retires at 50, but he wants to retire at 50, and he also wants to travel more.
They actually have a planning a trip with the Savers to go to Disneyland for their 10-year graduation from college anniversary, and they're trying to figure out how they pay for it. A buddy of Mr. Spender suggested he take a loan against his 401k to pay for their trip.
Right, and we also see this is a thing that we wish that they didn't even allow loans against 401ks. It's not a great option. It's like if everything else has been used, and it should be the last one, especially to finance a trip, would be a terrible thing to do. But on a 401k loan, he could take up to a $9,000 loan on the 401k. And then now he's paying another debt, just yep. another debt. But people get pulled into this because their buddies or whatever say you're paying yourself back. All the interest goes back into your account, so it isn't the same. It's a lot better and so forth. But it's really, if you think about it, you're taking some long-term asset and you're financing a short-term need and a short-term thing that doesn't give you any financial reward whatsoever. It isn't like you're taking it out for an investment. You're just buying it, and that Disneyland trip will be over. And next thing you know, now you're paying on something else for a long period of time.
Yeah, and your contributions are no longer dollar cost averaging into the market. They're actually paying back another loan.
Right. So I don't know if I've ever came across a situation where I recommended a 401k loan, but I certainly have recommended people not to do that. It takes away from them the long-term investment performance. You're taking a pre-tax loan and then paying it with after-tax dollars. There's just a whole bunch of things that go against why that is a good idea. And so if anybody is considering that, reconsider it. It just isn't a good idea.
And there's reasons. And I know that we can beat up the IRS all day long, too. It's pretty easy to do that. But when they put rules in place on certain types of assets to say you can't take this money out until you get to a certain point, as restrictive as that feels, it also makes a lot of sense. They don't want this to be your checking or your savings account. People need to save for their future, and sometimes it feels like they're trying to protect us from ourselves. But if it costs a lot to get the money out, people will hesitate to do it. You can still get it. It's just going to penalize you to do so. That it does make sense. Leave it alone. This is untouchable money. Once it's taken from your paycheck, you're not really allowed to even think about it until you retire.
Right. So in this case, we told them definitely do not do that. That is not a good idea for them to do that.
And his first comment, since his wife Sally's a nurse, is, well, she just needs to work more. I'm bringing in the majority of the income. I'm working longer hours. So you can hear he's starting to get a resentment towards her. And her feeling is, well, I don't want my kids to not have me around.
Right.
So the pull is starting to really come in the family. And it's starting to make you feel like you guys got to get this figured out, or it could cause a big problem for you soon.
Right. And the thing is, they've kind of painted themselves in the corner because of the debt, because they have so much debt and their income has not really gone up because his income went up, but hers went down. And when that debt goes up, then they don't have the ability, their flexibility, their freedom has really been reduced, because now she has to work some, but then they're with the three kids that, you know, if they work too much, then they have to have the grandparents watch the kids, and that gets them into a thing where she is starting to resent taking advantage of their grandparents, which leads them to consider daycare, which costs them more money. And it just, they're kind of in a no-win situation right now as far as that's concerned. We're just telling them the Disneyland trip, really, they can't afford it.
And they're struggling with the perception and trying to live up to their friends, the savers, and trying to do what they do, because they don't want to admit to them that they can't afford to do something. So it also is, it's almost like they seem to be embarrassed by that situation where they don't have the resources to do this and pretty much are saying, well, we're going to have to find a way.
Right. Right. And so then that leads itself to the thing of, well, we'll just put it on a credit card then, and
yep,
and we'll just do it. But this time we'll get it paid off. You know, we'll be real good and we'll get it paid off, because that's what they've done before. And that's what they'll be inclined to again, because, again, they have no discipline in their finances yet.
Right. And one of the comments that he brought up is he really, really doesn't enjoy his job anymore. He'd love a career change prior to turning 50 and retiring. But the thing with not having any margin or any savings or any way to do that is he's also tied himself to sticking in a job that he may not like, which, again, all these things, as you can see, cause stress and pressure on a relationship, on relationships with your kids, and frustrations with, you know what, our 10-year-old wants to play competitive sports. How do we find the room in our budget to allow them to do that? Because we got to pay for it, right? We can't
right.
let them miss out either.
Right.
But there's no room in their budget for them to find ways to do this.
Right. And then she's on the other side wanting to start saving more and more for education and college. Well, how they have a 10-year-old, they're not going to be able to save a lot anyway, and they don't have anything to save. Everything is already tied up in this debt already. So they're really kind of in a death spiral here, trying to keep up with somebody and trying to keep up with the lifestyle that they can't really afford.
And it gets to the point where it's hard to guide them on what to do next. When you sit down, their comment was, well, we found this credit card that's 6 months at 0% interest. Well, that's really not going to help them reduce their debt. It reduces the interest, because we actually saw a few credit cards, which I think we were both blown away. They said that they were at 23.5% interest. And we're like, there's no credit card out there for that.
Yep.
But if you don't use the credit card, you don't care what the interest rate is.
Right. So you never pay attention.
So you never even look. But,
right.
Yeah, there were a couple of them, and they weren't, I mean, there were a couple $100 on it, and it wasn't a hard thing for this person to get paid off. But the interest they were paying, they weren't even aware of it until we said, go look at your statements and figure out where you are.
Right.
And at that kind of interest, how will you ever pay that off?
Right. Yeah, we ran the numbers. It would be well over 10 years to pay it off if you were just making, you know, minimum payments, if that. It was terrible. And so Steve and Sally Spender, again, same thing as was 10 years ago as is today. They just have more debts.
Yeah, and how do you go through and figure out now how are we going to pay these debts off so we can move on in our life and have some freedom? So we're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we'll get into the fun place of finishing up with the Spenders, but starting to talk a little bit more about the Savers. Please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
A boy born in Joplin, Missouri was fascinated by anything with wheels and a motor. The odds of him going on to fascinate millions with his talent? 1 in 260,000. The odds of this born racer having 157 career top 10 finishes in NASCAR? 1 in 125 billion. The The odds of him winning both the Daytona 500 and the Brickyard 400 in the same year? 1 in 195 million. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. I'm NASCAR driver Jamie McMurray, and my niece has autism.
Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs.
Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. Give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. We are certified financial planners for those of you just tuning in for the second hour. We've worked with Dave for quite some time now. So we do like to come in and sit in with him and just try to change it up a bit, but we also really like the phone call. So please give us a call if you do. Why have any questions at all?
Yeah, even if you don't have any questions,
yeah,
just call.
Yeah, if you want to chat.
Yep.
All right, we were talking about our clients, the spenders. We have not yet quite gotten to the savers. Their situation's a little bit easier from a planning perspective, so we're going to spend a little more time on the spenders and different things that come up and maybe give you guys some advice on that as well.
Yeah, real quick, Steve and Sally Spender, 35 years old, have three kids. And they have about $130,000 student loan debt, $45,000 in credit cards, having some issues with contrasting thoughts on what they should be doing now. It's adding some stress to their marriage as far as she wants to start becoming more responsible, although she still has some different
ideas.
And he kind of still having his head in the sand saying he thinks they're going to be fine and they don't need to do anything different. They should live for the day.
Right. And her big focus, it seems to be most mothers at this point, is the kids are getting older. They want more time with the kids, but they also want to save for the kids' future. And there's just no room in their budget for this right now.
Right, because of all what they've done in the past.
Right. So which leads them to trying to find ways to get a quick fix. His was someone told him that he can actually make changes inside of his 401k, which he didn't realize the first time that they came in and they were sitting in a default fund that you get when you first join him into the 401k. So he wants to start basically chasing returns. He's looking at investments and saying, which ones perform the best? I want to buy that, because his way, instead of fixing the main issue of overspending, undersaving, he thinks that he can solve it by actually picking the best investment.
Right. And we see that quite often. You know, even in a financial planning software, we get and you set a goal and it says one of the things you can do is just increase the amount of return. Well, that would be great. I'll just take the best return one. The thing is that what's happened in the past, as it always says, is not a predictor of the future. And so when people are looking at their 401ks, the first thing they do is they look at what's been the best performers, and then they kind of rely on their inherent human characteristics of going, well, this has been the winner, I'm going to go with the winner. But really what you're doing is you're just buying the one that has done the best, therefore its share price is the highest, so you're just setting yourself up for potentially a down or mediocre returns going forward, or maybe even a decline. While we should be diversified across the board and saying we don't know which sectors or areas of the market are going to do best, therefore we need to have a little bit in everything.
And no other investment or purchase in the world do we say, I want to pay more than I should and wait till it's not doing so well and then sell it. You don't go shopping and say, hey, I'm going to load up on that expensive soup and not buy the soup that's on sale. This is the only thing that people try to chase and buy high, even though they say they want to buy low and sell high. Everything leads you to not doing that. And it's difficult because there is a lot of noise out there. We've seen newsletters that come out with 401k plans that actually say these are the top performing funds. They're now 5-star rated. You should really look at these. So not only does our human nature pull us to wanting to invest in something that's doing better, everything else pushes you that way as well.
Right. And investing is counterintuitive. Whatever we feel most compelled to do, we probably should be doing the opposite. Okay. So that's where diversification is such an important factor, is because no one knows. If you come into our office and we say, what's your prediction for the market? We'll tell you we have no idea. Therefore, we need to be invested across the board and be invested appropriately for what you're trying to accomplish and not trying to chase returns of what has been the hottest thing lately.
All right. We had people call and say, well, I've received an inheritance. What should we put it in? And our answer is pretty boring, the plan. If we've created a plan, we've created a portfolio for you, just because you get an influx of money at certain periods does not mean that we go try to find you the hot stock tip of the day. You just add it to the portfolio.
Yeah, and similar to what Lee said earlier in the last hour, you know, you might find returns. You might have an up market. We had this happen a couple of years ago. Have a market that's really on top, and the people that were said they were quote unquote conservative now see their returns lacking because that's what they're seeing. Either their friends are saying, their coworkers are saying, or they're seeing in the news or on the media or online. And then they start going, well, you know, maybe I could afford to be a little bit more aggressive right at the top when the market's gone up. And then you start buying in at the top and then it goes down. Then you go, oh, no, I'm conservative. And then you get in this vicious loop where you're conservative and aggressive and conservative and aggressive right at the wrong times every time.
That's why we do not like risk tolerance questionnaires, because they don't measure what's really important. They measure your emotion on the day that you sat down and filled that out. And that's not really risk tolerance, that's emotion, and that's how you feel right then. What we have to try to find out, and most advisors will do this, is they want to go in and say, not just to cover themselves and do a risk tolerance questionnaire, and that's what a lot of it is. You know, we got to make sure we have this on file in case we're ever questioned. That's not what it's about. What we need to find out is, where are you going? And we need to create a plan to get you there and explain to you why you have to invest the way that we're suggesting to get you to that level. Otherwise, you may never. I mean, if you come in and you say, I'm scared to death of the market, I never want to buy anything that could possibly go down, well, then there's really not a lot of upside potential in a portfolio that has no downside potential.
Right. And a lot of people paint themselves into a corner that way. Or that's where they get into annuities or that kind of thing, where they're so terrified of the market that they get talked into something. And then after smoke is cleared and the world isn't as scary as it was, then they're going, well, why isn't it working out? Well, this is why you're the one that dictated that you wanted to be conservative. You can't now say I'm aggressive and expect that you can get both. And you just can't.
And you need to find someone to work with that guides you.
And educates you.
And yes, and educates you, but doesn't just let you tell them what you want, because that will lead them to do exactly what we're talking about, buying high and selling low and moving based on the election coming up or this or that. And we don't want to go into politics, of course, but I'm just saying these are the questions that come up all the time, is what do we do if this candidate gets elected? Well, what do we do if this one gets elected? And again, I go back to what I was saying. You stick with the plan that you created. We can't let short-term noise get us off track, because every time we do that, we cannot get to our station. We're just going to continue to keep making the same mistakes and hoping that it works out differently.
Right, right.
So one thing that we see happening in 401ks now, again, is technology has taken in. First, it's very easy to get 401k loans. It used to be paperwork and forms and this and that. Anymore, you can log in and just take the money out and just start making a payment. Which is frustrating. It's nice because you actually can go in and change your allocations easily, which, again, all these things, there's pros and cons to everything, right? The easier it is to do something, sometimes that's not great because you can go in and move it around really easy, or you can take money out, things like that. But they also have a lot of plans that allow you to open an outside brokerage account and do self-directed investments that are outside of what's offered in that plan. Normally there's a fee to do this, and people get all excited because, hey, we can go buy Apple. Or we can go buy any stock that we want on the outside that's not in the plan. Mr. Spender here thought that was a great idea because one of his buddies did that, and he's chasing those returns and trying to catch up.
Right. And right now you have a person that doesn't really know what the 401k actually, how it works and so forth, and now he's going to go out and buy stocks, which buying stocks, even though you know, it's very easy to do. It's very common now. It was not very common years and years ago, but now it's very common. Everybody can do it. Everybody has the thought that, you know, I can buy stocks. I can be an investor. Buying stocks and speculating, which is what that is. It isn't investing. It's speculating. When you start doing that, then you're going into dangerous territory. And when you're taking your retirement funds, and now you're going to go, hey, I'm going to start shooting from the hip and buying stocks, especially about companies you know nothing about, you're going to be getting yourself in a big, you could get yourself in a big problem, because first of all, you're buying a stock that you don't know anything about, and then it goes up. When are you going to sell? What are you going to buy after that? What's your end game? A lot of people have no plan, and when they're buying individual stocks, that non-planning can be very painful.
And a lot of people that buy these individual securities, when they say, well, I know, I read about it, I understand it, I do follow it, I do track it. But what does that look like? What does it mean when you say that? Also, when things are going up, people become very excited and they watch it all the time and they're like, oh, I know all about this. Look, it's doing this, it's doing that. But then it starts to go down and they forget about it. So portfolios come in that they've just collected all these things and they don't even know what they own anymore. Right. And they're, oh, yeah, I remember when I bought that. It was for this reason. Or, yeah, I bought this. And they have no idea what the company does anymore.
I've had numerous clients come in. They own the stock and or whatever just because they're – son-in-law or son or daughter worked at that company. Had no idea if it was a good investment or not and had no plan for it.
Nope.
And I think that that's the worst thing about it. I've mentioned that before, is that people buy individual stocks and so forth and they have no plan on when they're going to sell, you know, any or when they're going to buy more or anything like that. They just, you know, I'm buying this because I think it's going to go up and then it goes up. And once it goes up, it's so hard, much harder to sell because then you've got that deer in the headlights. Well, if I maybe it's going to go up tomorrow. It went up a lot last week. Maybe I'll sell. Okay, I was going to sell at 15. Now I'm going to sell at 18. Well, now it's 18. Oh, maybe I'll wait till 20. Well, maybe it's 25. And you never. And so you wait until the time when you have no idea it's going to be. And usually after it's gone down and you're despondent, and then you sell it, and then you keep saying, I never can make money in the stock market because I always lose. It's because you have no plan to win.
You can tell we say the word plan a lot. I think probably our spouses go crazy because everything we do requires a plan. But it really makes life easy. If you say, I'm going to sell the stock once it hits 18, you do it. You don't go, oh, but what if it goes? Well, what if it does? You still made more money than what you paid for it. So even if you just take your money off and you say, I'm done with this, right, and move on. But a lot of times, but then again, why did it go up? Do you even know what the company does? Do you even remember what? Do you even know what your kids do at this company? So knowing what a stock is, like I know what Apple does. Well, we all know they make phones. We know they make technology. But what else do they do? Do you know anything about the company before you buy it?
Right.
And you got to really know it, not just a little bit. So we still think that people do best by letting the mutual fund managers help with this, because they really do study the companies and they are not emotionally attached.
Right. And I say this all the time in our meetings, is as much as we can take ourselves out of the investment process, the better we'll be. The more hands-on people tend to be, the less effective they are, just because the human nature of investing, unless you're very good, and some people are very disciplined and can stick with the plan, they will let their human emotions take over and do things that they're not supposed to do and at the wrong times.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about different planning and trying to help the spenders get their goals in line. And then we'll dive into the savers and what they've gone through in the last 10 years. Please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petzo this morning, talking about our spenders and savers and trying to get a plan going for the spenders. Please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. One of the big concerns that we're dealing with our spenders who, as Tom mentioned, 35, not really doing too well on their financial plan, have differences in how to handle things, and it's getting to be very trying on the marriage and what they do to move forward. He's tied, doesn't like his job. She's not wanting to work more and wants more time with the kids, so it's becoming quite a conflict. We delve in a little bit deeper, and one of the things that we had suggested they do 10 years ago was get life insurance and get a will, and they have not done either.
Yeah, and these are the basics of financial planning, is that if you have kids in the house, you should have a will, you should have life insurance. We never know what's going to happen, but now you have some people, little people that are counting on you, and you need to have some sort of plan for that if something dreadful happened like that, because when it happens, there is no going back and going, oh yeah, let me get that life insurance now that I'm dying. So we need to make sure that we do those practical things for those for those kids. The will, you should actually have one of those whether you have kids or not. But it because of the guardianship issues and so forth and making sure everything is done correctly, really need to get that done. And you can do it pretty inexpensively for both, especially if you're healthy. They're both very cheap, but we need to get those in place.
All right, we're going to go to the phones real quick. Dell?
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Good.
I listened to your conversation. Sorry to interrupt your storytelling there.
That's okay.
But I'm a little long of tooth, so I have had some trips around the block.
Yes.
Your general advice of starting out by just investing in mutual funds, I think, is okay. But if you do that, you really never give yourself a chance to learn what's really going on in the market and what is it really opportunities for investing that exceed those that you're going to get out of the average mutual fund.
That's a good point.
I think if you just put all the money in mutual fund, okay, that's it, I'm doing it, I'm going to go off and do something else, then that's fine. But for those of us who do find some interest in following what's going on in the investing field,
mm-hmm.
And believe me, I've tried a little of everything over time, I always felt that it was a good idea to at least use a little portion of your investing portfolio money for something that perhaps you have a feeling that there is a better chance of making a profit on it. And that's, for instance, I'll just use one from a long time ago. Arizona Public Service was building a huge nuclear power plant down there, and I had been following their stock for quite a while. And then Three Mile blew up,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden that stock just went clear in the tank. And so I thought, they're not going to just close that thing down. They're going to continue to develop it and operate it, and eventually it'll make money again. And so I got a chance to buy in. And I wish the hell I'd have had a lot more money to buy. Because in just about 3 years' time, it went from $5 clear back up to $35.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, then you got a little, gives you a little bit of money then to try something else as it comes along.
Right.
And Micron came along. And, we know that our computers are here to stay and they're going to gain. So, all right, fine. That was an investment for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see my point.
Oh, yes.
I won't labor it any further.
No, I agree with you. The only hesitation that we have is people get carried away on that side of it. And they either put too much in it, then they don't know when to sell it, and then they don't know. So if you're really paying attention, it's different. But the average investor doesn't spend a lot of time on their investments. They more collect stocks than do research to try to find out what they truly own. So,
the point I'm trying to make with it is that once you do that a little bit, it does make you really pay a whole heck of a lot more attention what's going on in the market.
Yep.
And believe me, a friend of mine told me one time, he said, you don't just read the newspaper, you digest it.
Yeah, it does. It makes you more informed in a lot of things. I agree with that completely. That's Dave talks about that even with doing the radio show. You have to keep up on everything, not everything, but as much as you possibly can, which makes you a better investor and which makes you a better thinker in everything. So, yes, I agree.
Certainly. Just one other question, if you wouldn't mind, again, going away from your mm-hmm. storytelling there. I have always asked Dave to try to take some of his educational.
Oh, do we lose you? Dell, I think we lost you. So if you're listening, give us a call back. I think for some reason you disappeared on us. All right. So we'll go on and continue, and hopefully Dell will get back with us and get his question asked. So let's explain a little bit more why we feel that life insurance is important as we get into a little more of how people need to save as well as take care of themselves in situations when they don't have a lot of extra cash flow and resources. So if something happened to either one of them, our Mrs. Spender would be in a lot of hurt if she lost her husband's $75,000 a year job. So if something happened to him, which I know it's not often, that's why life insurance is fairly cheap on the term policies, but it's a huge savings for her.
Right. So if you think of purely as a financial purchase and so forth, the family is banking on him making that $75,000 and more for the rest of his life until he retires, and then building up other assets. And when someone's life gets cut short and they don't get a chance to build that estate, then the life insurance does that for them. So in all good, proper financial planning, we should always be trying to take these risks out of the plan of not having someone be able to make that money for that period of time. And so that's where the life insurance is there. We're not big on whole life insurance. We think that term insurance is the better way to go because you get so much more coverage for a little bit of money. And that would be what we'd be recommending to them here still, is that you should get at least a 20 to 30 year policy covering, especially covering his at least to $750,000 to $1 million. $750,000 to $1 million would be appropriate for him to make sure Sally and the kids can continue to live the lifestyle that they've, well, hopefully a better lifestyle, and also be able to raise the children. The will is there just because we need to make sure that things are taken care of the way we want them to take care of if we're not around.
Right. We are going to take a break real quick. And, Jim, hang on. We'll get you when we come back from our break here. If you'd like, give us a call, 580-5436-580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone. Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. We had a couple people that called in during the break, so we're going to go right to the phones. Jim?
Hey, how are you guys? Good show.
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, good. I've got to make it quick. My question is going to be, what do you think the markets are going to do soon after the election? But the first thing I wanted to do is congratulate, thank, and praise Petzo. I just saw that he donated $100,000 of his own money to the Boise Rescue Mission, and I think that is just amazing. What a great guy! What a great charity! And Reverend Roscoe is such a good man, and I'm just, man, I mean, in today's society, when people are so selfish and don't do much for anybody, I think Petzo is a total stud. Just wanted to say that.
Oh, well, thank you. We'll pass it on to him. I can tell you, I've worked with the guy for 22 years, and he really is an amazing person.
What a great guy. Yeah, well, if you could maybe just make some comments of what you think, and I can listen off air about where that market's going to go, whether either way, you know, whether Trump or Clinton wins, I'd like to hear your opinion.
Okay. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. Well, that's one of the questions we do get asked probably every day, and I know this is going to sound terrible, but we just don't know. It's really hard to – you can never predict what the market's going to do, and I really don't know, Tom.
Yeah, I think – and we say this also all the time, is that, you know, the market will take all the information as available, and it will make moves far ahead of when we've decided that something happens or, you know, whatever. So if Hillary gets elected, the market has already been considering that already. If Trump gets elected, I think that's a little bit more of a wild card, just because we really don't know, you know, exactly where he's going to land on a lot of things. So I would say for the presidential election, the market probably is more cognizant of what happens in the Congress, because if the Republicans lose the House or they lost the Senate, which people don't, well, they might lose the Senate, but maybe not lose the House, then there's at least a balance. If Hillary gets elected, there will be some sort of stalemate, and the market tends to like stalemates. Then one party can't have all the control over all the policies and so forth, so that someone can offset the other. But I would say right now, I don't expect, and I, again, we have no idea, but it could be that there's a lot, it's not going to do much, because by the time we get there, the market will have already adjusted to that.
Right, and it's, and again, it's we could sit there and we could say, well, history's shown us this and that and this and that, but it's never the same. It never really truly is on this, and we just don't know what the market will do. So I'm going to go back to saying, if you're investing, keep doing it. Don't let this stop you. Don't try to predict if Hillary gets in, oh, I'm going to get out of the market completely. Oh, if Trump gets in, I'm getting out completely. Those kind of decisions never, they don't work. So what we're saying is, if you have a plan, don't let anything that happens in this short period of time take you off that plan. And remember that the market will always go up and down. So just keep adding to it, dollar cost average, do what you know you're supposed to do, and don't let the noise scare you or try to predict what will happen in the short term.
Yep.
All right. Mike?
Yes, my query is, when you've got a loss on stocks, do you have to, in fact, sell that stock? I have a stock that went bankrupt, but it still shows on my statement as worth $30 or something. Mm-hmm. How do I memorialize that so that I can make an appropriate filing with the IRS, if you follow my query?
Yes, I do. You can, a lot of times, contact the firm that you have the funds with and ask them to remove it from there. Say, it's worthless, please get it out of my statement. And then it's like selling it, basically. Then you can just write it off.
You write it off as a worthless position.
Yep.
And there is actually a code for that and everything. The IRS recognizes that some stocks become worthless, and you should be fine.
Yep.
And how do you memorialize that on your return, though? Do you just say stock loss and they accept that? And
right, right. Mm-hmm. So there is a code for it. I don't know how you do your taxes, but there's a thing that for worthless stock. And you should just say, basically, here's what I bought it for, and it's worth nothing at this point.
But you do need it written off your statement. Is that correct?
I would. It's just cleaner.
It's something that makes it a little bit, for your records, it makes it a little bit better. And also, and highly unlikely you'd ever get audited, but then you can easily show, here it was here, and now it's gone, and here's the situation. So all depends on the nature of the stock and where it's trading right now. But if it isn't trading on active markets anymore, the ticker symbol might have been eliminated, then it's easy for you to legitimize that to writing it off.
Right. And they're familiar with this. Most brokerage firms have a process of some sort of a worthless certificate or a worthless stock form. You submit it or whatever, and they just wipe it off your statement.
Very good. I got one other quick query if you got time.
Sure.
My mission is to gift a person, I don't know, say $5,000, but the mission is that it goes into an IRA, but I'm not, can I do that and insist that the giftee or the donee place it, I'm certain the donee will place it in an IRA, but is that going to require a tax reporting incident for the donee?
No.
Or, and the next query is then, would you recommend that it be a Roth or a traditional IRA? This person's, say, 30 years old.
More than likely a Roth. I mean, that's pretty much an answer that we'll give all the time. But it does depend on their situation and are they working, because they have to have earned income for you to contribute into an account for them. Even if you're gifting it, they have to have earned income, so you have to make sure of that.
Yes, they do.
Okay, good. And what you do, we do this for a lot of our clients. They'd gift to their children. They just write a check out to the custodian, and it goes right into the account. If it's a Roth, there's no reporting on either side. It is a note on the person you're giving it to's tax return. Did you fund a Roth this year? But it's not really, it's not a deductible thing either way.
Right. And also be cautious. Most situations isn't that, but there is an income limitation on who can how much you can contribute to a Roth. This year it's $194,000. Typically, if someone's giving that much money.
And that's a joint.
Yeah, the joint return. You need to make sure that they follow within that income, because it is under their Social Security number, so everything has to be legitimate under their Social Security number, as Jennifer said, for if there's enough income and so forth. And they need to be able to sign off on the account. So you need to, when you set up the account, you can't just set it up for them and do everything. They have to be the ones that own the account. They have to, you know, sign all the documents and so forth.
And make sure they don't have a Roth or a regular IRA already open and being funded, because the limits are per Social Security number. So in other words, if they've started a Roth on their own and they put $1,000 into it, you can only put in an additional 4,500. They can't do another 5,000, okay?
Is the limitation 5,500 or 5,000?
It's 55 for under 50.
5,500 for under 50 years of age?
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Thank you, folks.
You're very welcome. Have a great weekend. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little about the savers who aren't going to get as much time, but that's because they don't need as much work.
Right.
When we come back, please give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. This is Jennifer Stone. Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Pezzo. We're going to go right back to the phones because Dale called us back. Dale?
Okay, thank you for calling, accepting my call.
Oh, of course. Sorry we lost you. I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah. The point I was trying to ask about is that in the area of, say, we'll call it a little bit more aggressive investing, closed-end mutual funds frequently show up as a chance to gain a little bit over just regular mutual funds. Mm-hmm. And I've always been curious how those get started and whether they have any date being liquidated like some other investments could be.
Okay. We don't do a lot with closed-end mutual funds. How they work, and I'm sure you know this, but just to explain a little bit, they are very much like mutual funds, but they only issue a certain number of shares, more like a stock. Most mutual funds are what they call open, so that means every time someone adds to a mutual fund, they issue new shares to fund that purchase. Closed-ends don't work that way, so they trade differently. They trade like a stock. They can be selling at a premium or a discount, depending on what type, where they are in the market, which means they're either selling above what they were issued at or below. That's the premium or the discount. As to answer the question on if they go away, I don't know that I've ever seen one just completely go away or expire.
They're not like an investment trust where they have a maturity date.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
As far as I know, and it could be closing, a lot of these have quite a history, is that they still exist and they will exist in the future. It's just that the number of shares are limited to what it's in the market.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they tend to pay at a little higher rate than what a regular open-end mutual fund does. And so I think that's part of the reason they're categorized, perhaps, is for more aggressive investors.
Mm-hmm.
But I do find that they are kind of interesting, and and they have at least some of them do quite well for folks.
Yeah,
so
absolutely. Yep, it just depends.
Yep, yeah. Depends upon the fund and how they're invested, just like any other investment.
Right, absolutely.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you for that.
Of course, Dale.
No problem.
You have a
thank
great
you.
Weekend.
Thanks for calling back.
You bet.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about our savers. So the spenders went away. We sent them with a new game plan again, and we're just trying to work with them, and they've agreed to actually check in more frequently. So what we're hoping is that in the next time we do a show, we can update you when they're 45, and we'll see some progress one way or the other. But they are now going to get 3 to 6 months of savings built up. They've got to start paying off credit cards. They promise they're not going to Disneyland. And they're getting life insurance, and they're going to go set up a will immediately.
Right. So they said all the right things. We'll see if they do the right things.
Right. And, again, we did suggest trying, and we're not trying to push the Dave Ramsey program. We're just saying he has created such a great way to budget and figure out where to find everything and get it going. I've never seen anybody do it as well as he does.
Right, right. They've really set up a good program to take people from basically crawling to running as far as budgeting, and I think it's probably the most easily and how they do it and so forth is it really is effective.
Yeah, and if you have just listened to the show even a little bit, it's very much the same information all the time, so it's not like you go, oh wow, that was crazy good.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does show is the excitement and the feeling of, I'm never going into debt again. You
right.
don't know how hard this was and how wonderful I feel. The people that call into that program after they've made progress I don't know, maybe it's just because they're calling in, but they're thrilled to be where they're at.
Right.
It's quite freeing and quite a change of lifestyle.
Right.
So, and it gives you a lot of comfort in a lot of other areas of your life. So let's talk about our savers. We'd been meeting with them. They came in for probably an annual checkup, I would say, every year. Sometimes they went 18 months, so it was frequently, but enough. It didn't need to be all the time because they had the program set up through work. That's where they're doing a majority of their saving is in their 401ks. They're funding their Roth IRAs. And over the years, both of them have had increases of income. The difference is with this family, they did choose to both work full-time still. They didn't reduce their hours at all. But unfortunately, Mary Saver, and this is what happens for being able to plan, actually got cancer, had to take a year off of work.
Right. And so she had to go on long-term disability from work, but they had enough in savings that they didn't have to cut back on what they were putting away. And this is a perfect example of things that happen that are out of our control, but if we're saving money for those kind of things when we have no idea what they're going to be, when they're going to be, but we know something's going to come up, that is why we save the way we are. That's why you have that cash, because she's right back, she's healthy now, they're right back on the plan, and then skipping ahead a little bit here, because they bought the life insurance right when they were younger and when she was healthy, she has a good life insurance plan that she wouldn't be able to buy now. She'd be uninsurable.
Right. And this does happen. I mean, it's some of these stories, I know you're probably, oh, no one does that. No one does that. But they do happen often. But if you just try to stick with what you know needs to happen, and even if you have a lot of times these people will say, well, she doesn't need life insurance. They don't work as much or they don't have as high an income. We can get by without it. You really can't, because if you have young children, you now have more expenses of getting someone in to take care of those children. Other things come up. So life insurance is super important when you haven't built up savings, as well as building up savings and getting some sort of a protection if you can't work, because that's more likely to happen than to die.
Right, right.
So going through the list a little bit more, they are super excited for their trip with the Spenders because the Spenders haven't told them yet that they're not going. they've saved and were able to set that money aside over the years because they knew this trip was coming for a long time. They had talked about it when they first graduated from college, so they were ready and they're set to go. And even with her not working for a year, they still had that money set aside.
Yep, they were ready to go, and they've saved up to just as far as savings are concerned. I don't know if you remember going back to Steve Spender, he had 401k, he'd been doing 2%. John had been doing 10% in his 401k. He has $108,000 in his 401k, and as we remember, Steve had $18,000. So you can see how the compounding worked, really was very helpful there. They also have $40,000 built up in a Roth IRAs. And they have savings of $25,000. So they have a solid footing. Again, they didn't miss a beat when she got sick. These guys are now ready to move on to the next level, take it to the next level, and they're going to start saving for college. So they've got everything set, and they have the disposable income to do that.
Right. And when they came in the first time, their main goals for us were to pay off their student loans, put all that money down for a down payment on a house so they could get the 20% down. They started their retirement. They actually have worked the plan well enough that they said they wanted to have kids within 5 years. They had waited 5 years and had their first child, so they now have two. They're now wanting to start funding their educational accounts, and they have the liquidity to do that. They have no debt at all at this point other than their home, which they have on a 15-year mortgage to try to get that gone and be completely 100% debt-free by the time their kids are finishing up college. So they've worked the plan. They're doing very well. There's not a lot when you look at people that do it this well that you sit there and you think, what can we do to tweak it? Well, now they have that freedom. They have the flexibility to do more fun. So the family, the Spenders, want to have more fun, but they have no flexibility to do so because they've done a poor job of budgeting. These folks that kind of sacrificed a little bit, feels like they did, really haven't, because they are the ones getting to take the trip. The Spenders don't get to take the trip, have actually done a very good job of setting themselves up.
Right, and they paid to win. You know, they paid the price early. to pay down off the student loans to live way below their means. Excuse me. That just goes to show you it doesn't. The personal finance really falls into two things. It's reducing or eliminating debt and saving. And then you save in the best ways you can. One thing that we utilize a lot is that we use the 401k and the plans at work as the primary savings vehicles, because people behavior-wise will stick with a plan when the money is taken out before they get a chance to get it. So as much as like I said before, as much as you can take yourself out of the equation and make it automatic, people seem to do a better job of that instead of getting the money and then getting an opportunity to have the devil speak in their ear and say, hey, maybe you should be doing something a little bit different. Maybe you should be buying this. And when the money's taken out and be done, you don't even realize that it was gone.
Right. And if you can, like we said, set up that 10% right off the bat, like the savers did, his income has gone up too. They're basically, his went up the same as the saver or the spenders, but with putting that 10% away, and we didn't even account for the match. He's getting a 2% match as well. It's amazing how much it matters to start early. Some people end up not being able to contribute as much when maybe they're cash flowing kids through college or some expense comes up. But the more you can get in the first time that you first sign up for that first 401k, mm-hmm. and let that continue to compound and increase it until you can get it up to 10%, or if right off the bat you can get to 10%, it's amazing the compounding effect.
And don't let that the match be a crutch. You know, a lot of people, oh, I don't have to put in so much. I'm just going to put in 5% because they're doing 5%. Try to get to the 10% of your income. And then if there's a match there, great, that's awesome. But a lot of times I'll have people, oh, I don't put anything in my 401k because they don't match.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the match is gravy. It isn't the meat. You need to be putting that money in. If there is a match, great. But you still need to be taking advantage of that because it helps you reduce your taxes now, and you're able to save later, and it has a lot of walls around it to keep you from messing with it. So utilize those company plans as much as you can. They are probably, as I said, we use them as the primary means of building, initially anyway, building wealth.
It also teaches you to live below your means and live within your means. If you spend what you have available to spend once everything else is taken care of, then it teaches you to live on less.
Right.
We always say you need to practice what you think you can do. So if you really say, oh, I can live on 50% less than I'm making, and some people come in at retirement and their paycheck's going to go down that much, they're like, oh, yeah, I can do that. But nothing's paid off. They have credit card debt, so they can't do that, or they would have done it. And if they say, oh, well, that was because we're enjoying life now, and now we're ready to get serious, well, don't quit your day job to get serious. Try to get it all figured out and make sure you can do that before you're done.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of people that don't use the words, we can't afford it enough.
Right.
You know, you need to figure out what your plan is, where you're going, and then decide when you're going to say that, because there are going to be things you're just going to have to say no to. And that is probably the hardest thing people have, is because society and credit cards allow you to say yes when you should say no.
And as you can see from our two stories here with the spenders and the savers, the spenders are the ones that are living a tighter, more restrictive life, even though they want more freedom.
Right.
The savers are the ones that are able to have the freedom, and they didn't work as hard as you would think to get there. The spenders are trying to find ways to get what they need and what they want.
Right.
The savers have the flexibility now that they have it.
Yeah, delayed gratification is a huge, huge thing here. John and Mary just had a little bit more maturity at the beginning, and now they're able to profit from it.
Right. And the one thing we want to point out, too, is this is not fixable. This can be fixed. People can get on a plan, and they really, truly can start to work their way out of any hole, but you just have to find a plan. You have to stick with it. I want to thank you for listening to us. We always enjoy coming in and covering for Dave when he's gone. If you have questions during the week, feel free to call our office at 853-2000, and we look forward to seeing you guys, or talking to you guys, I guess not seeing you, in a couple months.
All right. Take care.